From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. At least 17 people have died from a mysterious lung illness related to e-cigarettes or vaping. Government officials are now investigating the flavors that e-cigarette manufacturers have heavily marketed to teenagers as a possible source of the disease. A new study by the Mayo Clinic examining the lung tissue of patients impacted say that they have chemical burns akin to exposure to chemical weapons or an industrial accident. But one critical part of the story is why our regulatory system allowed the widespread manufacture, sales, and marketing of devices and products that were not adequately tested in the first place. My guest is Amit Narang. He is the regulatory policy advocate with the group Public Citizen. Welcome to the program, Amit.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So first, let's talk about how it is that this particular product made it onto the market. I remember when they first started popping up, people would walk around with these devices that looked like, you know, lengthy USB device or port. And turned out it was this substitute for traditional smoking of cigarettes. As far as you know, what was the process by which these devices came onto the market?
So they started coming onto the market simply because manufacturers were creating them back in, you know, the early, say, 2010s. Manufacturers were developing e-cigarettes. These were, in many cases, startups. And of course, as you're saying, they were being billed as an alternative to smokers, but not only an alternative, one that was being claimed by the manufacturers to be not as healthier, essentially, than smoking, not as dangerous as smoking, not as addictive as smoking. But none of that had been verified independently, certainly by the government or the Food and Drug Administration. Nonetheless, there were no prohibitions at first on these types of electronic cigarettes because the law was really only applying to what's called, you know, combustible cigarette products. So that's the traditional cigarette that you light and smoke. And so the manufacturers were claiming essentially that electronic cigarettes legally could not be regulated by the Food and Drug Administration because the law didn't apply to them. Now, interestingly, Congress had passed a law in 2009 called the Tobacco Control Act, and Congress's intent was to extend, you know, the restrictions and prohibitions with respect to combustible tobacco products to electronic cigarettes. But it was going to require the FDA to go through, you know, the regulatory process of designating those e-cigarettes subject to prohibitions and restrictions in the same way as combustible cigarettes. And this is where, you know, the story comes in of the FDA trying to do that under the Obama administration, and essentially and sadly, the White House blocking the FDA from doing so back in 2015, 2016, which is, of course, has led to the vaping crisis that we're dealing with now.
So why did the White House, this is Obama's White House, block that regulatory process? Did they give a justification?
So they did. You know, this is really a story about regulatory failure, and it's really a story that shows that even in better times, under an administration like the Obama administration, that actually believes in regulations that protect the public, you know, is not categorically opposed to all regulation in favor of all deregulation like our current administration, even in those better times, we have a regulatory system that's frankly too slow, too weak, and most important of all, too captured by corporate interests to protect the public until it's too late, until we start seeing the harms that we're seeing now, deaths and illnesses. And so the reason that the White House blocked it and the particular office that blocked it is one that most people aren't aware of. It's called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. Their role is to basically review regulations before the agencies publish it. But in practice, they often use their authority to review regulations to ensure that the regulation is politically something that the White House wanted to do. And what happened when the regulation got from the FDA to that office in the White House is that there was this avalanche of lobbying that ensued from the vaping industry, telling the White House basically, if you prohibit flavored e-cigarettes, you will shut down all of these vaping businesses and basically destroy the vaping industry. And that had a huge impact on the White House. And they ended up blocking the FDA, which believed certainly that the risks were adequate at that point, more than clear at that point, to prohibit flavored e-cigarettes. They told the FDA, well, in our view, we think we're being told that these are going to have enormous costs in terms of destroying the vaping industry. The vaping corporate interests are telling us that. And we don't believe that you're right in terms of the risk. We have not seen enough of the harms to understand what the benefits are to compare to the costs of prohibiting these flavored e-cigarettes. And so we're going to override you, FDA, and we're going to prevent you from putting out this regulation because we just don't see the benefits of it outweighing the costs. I mean, and this is just a very clear and sad example of how our regulatory system essentially has to wait until it's too late in order to actually regulate these products, because if people aren't dying, then you can't make the case that regulating those will be beneficial. It's kind of a strange logic where you almost have to wait until people die and get sick in order to demonstrate that the government needs to take action to protect the public. But that is very much how our regulatory system is set up. This is why our regulatory agencies and regulatory system and government, frankly, is so captured by corporate interests that oppose regulation.
Right. I mean, that's part of a larger story. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we see on so many fronts when it comes to the exposure of the public and the risk to public health of products that are not properly tested. I mean, it could apply to things like pesticides or chemicals in, paint or other, flame retardants in furniture. And many other countries, especially industrialized nations, have what's called a precautionary principle, right? Where you test a product that's brand new before it's put on the market because the manufacturer has to prove it's safe in order to allow it to the public to be exposed to it. In the US, it's the other way around. A free-for-all until it is proven that there is harm to public health. So as you said, people have to start dying first or being harmed pretty severely. We see this for toy manufacturers as well. Children have to start dying before the government actually decides that it's worth regulating these products. And in the case of e-cigarettes, we're talking about, and I had to look this up because I frankly was not familiar with how these products work. These are battery-powered devices that convert some sort of liquid, oil, flavoring, etc., into a mist or a vapor that gets directly sent into your lungs because you're inhaling them. So I suppose they were marketing them saying that you don't have the tar and the carbon monoxide and all those other harmful products that traditional cigarettes have, except you're sending these vapors into your lungs. But what are the vapors? And so that's been a big question, right? People don't know if it's some of the folks who've gotten sick have gotten sick from THC oil, which is a marijuana product. Others just simply these flavors that are marketed heavily, especially to children. And so how is it that this completely brand new device, which did not exist before, was just allowed onto the market with no regulation? It's just remarkable to me.
Well, it's remarkable to and you know again a sad reflection of you know how weak our regulatory agencies are vis-a-vis the industries they're supposed to be regulating at you know at arm's length and regulating in ways that protect the public from risks before they occur, not after they occur, but before they occur. That is certainly the logic behind what you describe as the precautionary principle, which is exactly the case in Europe with respect to regulation of chemicals. You know, there's something called in the EU the REACH law, and that is a law that, as you say, dictates that chemical manufacturers must submit new chemicals for testing to European government agencies, health and safety agencies, as a precondition to allowing them on the market. We have it exactly backwards here, where we basically let stuff on the market, we let companies use the American public as guinea pigs, essentially, you know, and make claims that have not been tested or scrutinized whatsoever by any independent authority, just coming from the mouth of the manufacturers, you know, and the public is supposed to believe and trust them. And then, you know, when it's already too late, when people have already gotten hurt and been killed, then all of a sudden we get into a crisis situation where, you know, the government is put in a position where they have to regulate extremely quickly, which is exactly what is happening right. With the Trump administration right now. We should have a different system where we have our government agencies not being influenced by corporate interests, identifying risks early, listening to the experts, not the you know political appointees at the White House, and protecting the public you know from harms that are unknown. Nobody knows still what are really in these products in the liquid. You know, that's being vaporized.
And all of it is, so much of it rather, especially is being marketed to teenagers. In fact, one in four high school students say that they have vaped in the past month. And now we're looking at 800 plus illnesses, 17 deaths. What is the government doing right now? I understand that one of the agencies that is attempting to regulate this industry is the Federal Trade Commission. I was surprised at that. What is the FTC doing?
Yeah, so the FTC is looking into the marketing side of this. Mm-hmm. You know, the representations, like I've been saying, that the e-cigarette manufacturers are making are based on no independent information. It's just coming from the manufacturers, who of course have, you know, a business incentive to try to downplay the risk, downplay the health issues from their products as much as possible. And they're also marketing in ways just like the traditional tobacco companies used to before Congress intervened. They're marketing in ways that are appealing to the youth. So we're talking not just about deaths and illnesses, but we're talking about a ballooning addiction epidemic that's happening with respect to e-cigarettes and teens.
And we don't know the long-term health effects of that, right? Right now, we are seeing what are likely the short-term health effects because possibly of contamination, but there are long-term health impacts. For example, traditional cigarettes, a long-term health impact was an epidemic of lung cancer. We don't know what the long-term health impact of e-cigarettes is.
That's right, because we don't know what's in them, and we don't know how addictive they are. You know, the companies are making claims that they're not as addictive as nicotine. But again, it's not tested. It's not been independently verified. So we have addictive products with unknown long-term health consequences, and only now we're finally, you know, because essentially the vaping crisis has gotten completely out of control, finally having the government do what it should have done years ago and ban these products until the manufacturers can submit them to the FDA so the FDA knows what it is and can test them and then potentially approve them if they actually are what the manufacturers are saying they are, you know, a safer alternative to cigarettes. But that is up in the air, and certainly the e-cigarette manufacturers are fighting tooth and nail right now to not have to submit their products for approval to the FDA, and certainly don't want this ban on e-cigarettes until those are approved by the FDA.
And in fact, the CEO of one of the biggest manufacturers, Juul, spelled J-U-U-L, did step down partly over the aggressive marketing to young kids, to teenagers. But it's remarkable to me that they feel they have the right to sell products to the public that are directly inhaled as vapor into our lungs that they don't want the government scrutinizing. Just absolutely incredible. I mean, it's not just almost like eating, you know, our food that we put into our body, but exactly, you know, a parallel. We, you know, the food we eat is regulated because we put it into our bodies. It goes through our digestive system. This is something that goes directly into our lungs, into our respiratory system, inside our bodies, and can wreak absolute havoc in those sensitive lung tissues. And they are resisting the regulation. Do you hope that the Trump administration, which seems much more captured by industry and willing to kowtow to profit motives, is actually going to do enough about this crisis than, say, Obama's government would have had this crisis unfolded during Obama's presidency?
I mean, look, I'll say this. I will believe it when I see it. So, you know, exactly all of what you say, the captured agencies under Obama have gotten so much worse, of course, under President Trump. At the same time, this crisis has gotten to the point where the government can't continue to ignore it. And I think everybody agrees the government has to take action. But public outcry and public support for the government acting to protect the public doesn't always, you know, carry the day. Inside the Beltway here in D.C., the corporate interests have their armies of lobbyists and they win. I mean, this is an example here in 2015, 2016 of the lobbyists winning by pushing the White House to block the FDA from what the FDA thought was the right thing to do in banning e-cigarettes, and people died. And we see that repeated over and over again. And I hope it's not the case this time. And I do hope that the FDA takes aggressive action to address the vaping crisis by largely prohibiting e-cigarettes if they're not safe. But again, I can't say that I have lots of confidence. I will believe it when I see it.
I just want to quote from a Washington Post article about one man's experience with this disease, a man in Utah. Within days, Alexander Mitchell had gone from being a 20-year-old hiking enthusiast to being kept alive by two machines, forcing air into and out of his lungs and oxygenating his blood outside of his body. His father said he went from being sick to being on death's door in literally 2 days. The doctor said he was dying. In all honesty, I was preparing to plan a funeral for my child. I wept and wept for this boy 6 weeks after he left the hospital. And so this is one of the lucky ones who survived this disease. Mitchell has resumed hiking, but with his lung capacity diminished by 25%, he does not go for long or as often as he used to. He also struggles with his short-term memory. Doctors say they're not sure whether he will fully recover. So we're talking about a very serious disease. It's not like a cold or even the flu, which if you survive the flu, you generally recover pretty fully. This is a serious disease that has long-term health impacts that people still don't understand. Aside from addressing the marketing of it, which unfortunately is the way that the U.S. tends to regulate products. Let's just address how it's marketed, if that. Are there other things that the U.S. could do? There have been several states that have put an outright ban and municipalities that have put an outright ban on the flavors. Is that a smart way to go about addressing this crisis until more is known, put moratoriums on these products until better research is at hand?
Well, I think it's smart, but more importantly, I think it's the only way to act. If the federal government is not willing to take action to address this crisis by banning, flavored
e-cigarettes, the federal government could just ban them temporarily, at least.
Well, that's right. And that is what is being contemplated by the FDA right now, according to the FDA head and President Trump. But it hasn't happened yet. And states are not interested in waiting at all. And it's their right to protect the citizens of their state. And banning, putting in place immediate bans, for certain states can very much be the right solution, potentially really the only solution for states that are worried about the vaping crisis within their state in the face of inaction by the federal government. So, I mean, it's almost a question of what else do you want them to do? At this point, we have to get a handle on the vaping crisis. And frankly, we've waited too long to do anything but take extreme measures. And so that's what's happening now with the bans. And I think that states need to step up if the federal government is not going to.
Store owners, especially those that sell vaping products exclusively, and of course the vaping industry itself, have deeply opposed it. There are now lawsuits against some of the bans. For example, in New York, there has been a lawsuit by sellers of these, or rather the store owners who sell these e-cigarettes, saying that the ban is going to be, and I quote, a death sentence for their business, which is just such a terribly ironic figure of speech to use. This was what one store owner who filed a lawsuit said. And of course, it is a death sentence for the people who get ill from these diseases. So it's pretty amazing to see this. What do you hope for the public's response to be? I know parents in particular are terrified. Parents of teenagers are terrified that their kids will be one of those 25% of teenagers that are picking up this habit.
So I think that there really needs to be much more awareness, and I'm glad to see now more awareness and a growing national conversation around the dangers of e-cigarettes. I will say that I'm starting to see, though, like you're pointing out, the same strains of pushback that we saw, that carried the day back in 2015, 2016, the vaping industry saying, hey, you're going to put us out of business. We're going to lose, this much money. The economy is going to get hurt. The jobs are going to be lost, that kind of thing. And then more claims, currently in the face of this massive vaping crisis, that, e-cigarettes are a safer alternative, just based on virtually nothing, at least nothing that has been independently verified by the FDA, they're safer alternatives than traditional cigarettes. So it does worry me to see a kind of repeat of the campaign to push back against banning, prohibiting, and restricting from teens, flavored e-cigarettes and e-cigarettes in general. We cannot continue to wait see more and more death, sicknesses, and addiction from this product in order to take action. It's clear that we have to take action now, and I think parents should be concerned about their kids, because this is as much a teen vaping crisis as a crisis for any segment of the population.
Amit, give out a website for Public Citizen where people can find out more about the work you do.
Sure. You can find all of our work at www.citizen.org. And encourage your viewers to come and see the work that we do at our website.
That's citizen.org. Thanks so much for joining us today, Amit.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Amit Narang, regulatory policy advocate at Public Citizen. We've been discussing the vaping health crisis. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.